I'm Nick Gillespie for Reason TV. Today we're talking with Judge Andrew Napolitano, author of the new book, Lies, The Government Told You, Myth, Power, and Deception in American History. Judge, thanks for talking.
Pleasure to be with you, Nick, whether we're talking about my book or anything.
Why did you write this book?
Because the thing that impressed me the most when I was on the bench as a judge hearing arguments between the government and a defendant in a criminal case, or the government and someone who had been injured by the government in a civil case, was the extent to which the government would lie and people in the courtroom, members of the jury, lawyers involved in the case, would expect the government to lie. You know, there are at least a half dozen Supreme Court opinions that say the government can lie.
Tell us what's one of them.
Well, the context in which the government may lie is when it's interrogating a potential defendant. The classic modern-day example is Martha Stewart. She's with an FBI agent there in her lawyer's office. The lawyer says to the FBI agent, is my client a target? The FBI agent says no. The FBI agent then says to Martha Stewart, did you buy such and such a stock on such and such a day? She says no. They each lied. She went to jail for 5 months and he got a promotion.
That's right.
Well, what is it about the government? Are they morally superior to us that they can lie with impunity, lie with the law behind them, and if one of us would presume to do it to them, we could end up in jail? The government has institutionalized lying. From All Men Are Created Equal, hard for me to attack that because it was written by my hero and favorite president, Thomas Jefferson, to We Don't Torture, and about 15 or 16 significant historical lies in between. When I kiddingly told friends I was writing a book about the government lying, and it was 4,000 pages long, many of them said, you got all the lies in 4,000 pages? Obviously, it's not 4,000 pages, it's 300. But it shows you how acculturated we are to the concept of government lying.
Let's talk about some of the specific lies that you run through. You say one of the lies is, we don't torture. How is that a lie, and what is destructive, not just about the torture, perhaps, but the lying?
Almost all government lying is destructive because it induces people to view the government in a false environment. Some lies, like LBJ in 1964, I'm the peace candidate, or FDR in 1940, your boys will never fight a war on foreign soil, or George Bush in 2004, we don't torture, I'm not spying, and they have weapons of mass destruction. Those are the category of lies that induce us to give power to the government based on those lies. Question, would we have given that power to the government had we known the truth? The we don't torture is particularly offensive. A, it's incorrect, it's a lie, and the person who said it, President Bush, must have known that it was a lie because we now have documents that we know he saw in which he authorized torture. B, it's particularly horrific because it rejects the notion that all men are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. If a government presumes to torture someone, they reject the notion of inalienable rights.
Some people would say that, we don't torture American citizens. Why, from your point of view, does it not matter if we're torturing non-citizens or Americans?
This morning, the Washington Post reported that the CIA announced that it will target Americans when they're overseas for assassination. So it's obvious that being an American is no additional protection. But as a matter of constitutional law, the Constitution protects persons. It's not limited to Americans, and persons is not even limited to good persons. It protects Americans, it protects aliens, it protects those legally here, it protects those illegally here, it protects those who wish us well and those who have caused us harm. It makes no distinction whatsoever. This is absolutely consistent, the constitutional protection of persons, with the Lockean and Jeffersonian and Augustinian view and Thomistic view that our rights come from God and are gifts into our humanity and are as much a part of us as the fingers on the ends of our hand. That would apply to me, to you, to George W. Bush, to Barack Obama, to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, to Richard Speck, to Al Capone, to anybody that the government wants to restrain for any reason.
Do you think that natural law is gaining ground or is receding?
Amongst people who are concerned with the government, amongst people who have come to realize that we have rights that are integral to our humanity, it's gaining ground. Amongst young people, it's gaining ground. Amongst the liberty movement, it's gaining ground. Amongst reasons, viewers, listeners readers, it is gaining ground. In the government, it is not. The other day at Fox, I asked Congressman Jim Clyburn, the number three ranking Democrat in the House, Congressman Clyburn, where in the Constitution is the government authorized to regulate health care? And he said to me, Judge, most of what we do is not authorized by the Constitution. Where is it prohibited to the government to regulate health care? He has turned, in his own mind, turned the notion of limited government on its head and believes that the Congress can do anything it wants unless it's specifically prohibited right. in the Constitution. But the concept of natural law, articulated in the Declaration of Independence, codified in the Bill of Rights, is the opposite of that. And that is Congress may only do what the Constitution authorizes it to do. And there are areas of human behavior where Congress may not regulate, no matter what the good there may be that could come from its proposed regulation.
Let's talk about a place, another lie that speaks to this. Congress shall make no law abridging free speech. This is arguably the most important right.
It is.
And what are the ways in which, you know, when you look around the world today or look around America today, we have much more access to many more materials. Is censorship, is abridgment of free speech an issue, and in what way?
Look, free speech was just saved by three black-robed judges in this city earlier this week when the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit ruled that the Federal Communications Commission cannot regulate the Internet. They really wanted to make sure that there was the fairness doctrine on the Internet. I mean, if anything is the free marketplace of ideas today, it is the Internet. But this goes way back, Nick. I mean, think about it. The same generation, in some instances, the same human beings who wrote Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech, also wrote the Alien and Sedition Acts, which made it a crime to criticize everybody in the government except the vice president, because it happened to be Jefferson at the time. Congressman Matthew Lyon of Vermont. If anybody is from New Orleans, Chicago, or New Jersey, they'll appreciate this story. Congressman Lyon from Vermont was prosecuted for criticizing the president, John Adams, for being too involved in the pomp and circumstance of the office. But the most offending thing he said was, and John Adams had a little problem with his waistline, he referred to the president as his rotundity. Here's the New Orleans, Chicago, New Jersey angle. Lyons was reelected to Congress from his jail cell because people were so outraged at this prosecution. But think of it. We fought a war against a king and a parliament 3,000 miles away because they assaulted speech. We became a country and we began to assault speech. Lincoln locked people up for what they said. Woodrow Wilson locked people up for what they said. FDR locked people up for what they said. George W. Bush locked people up for what they said. So what part of shall make no law does the Congress not understand?
Who did George Bush lock up for what he said?
Two librarians in Bridgeport, Connecticut, were served with a self-written search warrant authorized by the Patriot Act. That's where an FBI agent and his or her boss together write a search warrant without going to a judge, as the Fourth Amendment requires. The FBI agent shows up at this library. The librarian is 86 years old. He hands her the search warrant and says, "Don't tell anybody about it." She looks at him and says, "Who the hell are you?" He was young enough to be her grandson. She hands the search warrant to her assistant. That was considered speech, telling somebody else that she had received a self-written search warrant. The Patriot Act makes it a crime to tell anyone that you have received a self-written search warrant. You can't tell your spouse in the bedroom, your lawyer in her office, your priest in the confessional. You can't even tell a judge in a public courtroom under oath that you received it. This 86-year-old librarian told her 75-year-old assistant, and the government went after them.